Hello and welcome to Nintendo Podcast System with myself, Matthew Gibson, and joining me as always are Jack Gorn, Sam Barnes, as well as special guest, Ollie Jameson.
Hello, peeps.
Hey.
And I muffed it up again. I always muff it up, but I can't be asked to do...
Come on, intro. Production values.
I'm not doing it, no. Anyway,
Think of the fans.
Well, they don't know the pain and suffering I have to put up with doing it yet again. I always muck up my speech, right? In real life and on this, that is the trouble with me doing a podcast. So I feel 2 years ago, which we'll get into in a bit possibly, I was like, I'm going to do a podcast, not knowing at how bad I could speak. But I'm quite proud we've came this far. Anyway, Ollie, Oliver, Mr. Jameson, you are
Hello.
Our special guest this week, so why not introduce yourself?
I run a website called MinusWorld.co.uk, which is a games culture website. So it's kind of focused all around all the things that have come from gaming, the offshoots, so anything, art, music, fashion, you know, that kind of thing. And I also focus a lot on obscure games, overlooked games, kind of niche stuff from Japan, weird games as well, so another one of my kind of favourite subjects. So I'm hoping I can bring a bit of that to the discussion today.
I think I followed you maybe because of Inazuma 11. That
I'm pretty sure that's how,
yeah,
how we met.
We were probably mourning how
the third Inazuma 11 Go game is never coming to the West.
Always, like whenever we talk about it, it's like always that bit. But hopefully
every couple of months I have to bring it up. So
yeah, like for me it's like at least once a month. No, whenever they talk about Yo-Kai Watch in the UK. That's great, but what about Inazuma?
What about the power of football, you know?
I can't believe there's actually another Inazuma 11 fan. This is amazing.
Yeah, I know.
I can't remember how I got into it. I like football. I'm a Fulham man. I was hooked on it immediately. It was just so over the top. It was so wacky. And now it's over basically in the West. And to put it in the words of the protagonist of Inazuma 11 Go, it's making soccer cry. So it's very sad.
Oh, wow. That's good.
But yeah, there are a couple of us out there, Inazuma fans. Most of them seem to be in France and Spain and stuff though.
But there's Inazuma 11 R, so I hope that gets at least some attention.
Yeah, definitely, with the weird wristband thing.
Well, we'll be getting Lady Leighton over here at least, so as a fan of that series as well, I'm quite happy. But
anything by level 5 is interesting, because they've still got a couple of other things. They've got the Snack World coming, and there was that thing with the giant robots. The interesting thing about the new Inazuma 11 is they haven't said what platform it's on. They just kind of said unspecified portable device. So you'd immediately think it must be on the Switch. But
yeah, it'd be amazing. But anyway, so that is our guest, Ollie Jameson. I hope you enjoy his presence on the show. I'm sure we all.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. It's not even the we're about 3 minutes into the episode and already we're having a good time. So let's go forward onto the news section.
Break.
Oh, wait, no, hold on. Oliver, what is our intro music?
Oh, our intro music. I picked something really weird today, right? This is a song from the BIOS for the Satellaview, which is a add-on for the Super Famicom, if you don't know, which basically connected to a satellite up in space and let you download games and magazines and other stuff like that. And the BIOS is actually a game. It's called BSX, The Story of the Town Whose Name Was Stolen, which is a bit of a mouthful. And it's this kind of strange, kind of Earthbound-esque overworld where you go into different buildings and they each have different functions. And it's kind of, I just wanted to pick a song that represented a bit of Nintendo history that doesn't get enough love. So that's why I've gone for that.
Nice. And with that, finally, let's move on to the news. So here we are in the news section right now. As usual, we just talk about recent news. Round about the last week or two, I'd say. Okay, so let's start with one that has I would say has risen quite a lot of controversy, but I say that lightly. So there's this indie game called Rhyme. It's a 3D puzzle adventure sort of thing. It looks really cool. However, for Switch owners, it will cost £10 extra. And the developer have stated that it's mainly to cover the production costs, because the cost of cartridges cost more than discs as used on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. And the digital prices have to be the same as the retail, basically, because Nintendo have this policy where that's an effect. Because then, if it's cheaper on the eShop than it is at retail, then high street retailers like Game and such won't have a reason to stock those games. So that's why there's the same price. Anyway, that's the premise on it. What are your thoughts on this and what it can mean for future indies?
I wonder if it's going to put them off completely. Possibly. Put them off.
It will depend on whether or not they have a retail release, though. Because they have to price match, but only if it's on retail, I assume. So, I mean, you've got companies like Limited Run Games who are putting physical releases out of indies kind of later on. So I'm wondering how that will factor in. You know, if they release a game on the eShop for £6 or something, and then they put it out on a cartridge later, they're not going to want to sell that for £6, are they? So
it's quite surprising to see the indies actually going on to cartridges, because normally they're just stick to downloads. Just like I said, it's cheaper. I don't understand why it would be more. It would be paying exactly the same price either way. I don't understand it. It's just very strange to me. I thought surely Nintendo should cover the cost of cartridges and things.
You think they would, or else you've got that kind of N64 situation, haven't you, with the cards versus the discs?
Yeah, but maybe there's been a bit of a change in that sort of way, and that could deter a lot of people in terms of developing games for the Switch. If we have to pay for every single cartridge they sell, a percentage of it, that's a bit strange, really, if you ask me.
Yeah. But,
how many other indie games do we know that they get physical releases? Ukulele and Shovel Knight are the ones that sort of come out straight away, but
well,
I don't think there's going to be many others.
See, I believe when they announced the Switch version for Ukulele, I believe they also said that it's not coming to retail, and I think this could be a reason, or at least that's my theory on why Ukulele won't come out on retail.
I mean, you expect a game like that, or Shovel Knight, you know, it's going to hit around a kind of £30 price point. That's probably what it would be on, you know, PS4 or Xbox One if it was at retail. But, I mean, it could be a production thing. It could be the cost of making those cartridges with all the, you know, with all the bittering stuff in them. That might cost £10, we don't know.
Maybe.
Go on.
Oh, I was about to say, because, like, Treasure Trove was around about
$22.49.
Yeah. So, I'd say, like, an extra $7.50 for a physical version doesn't sound too unreasonable, really.
No, I guess as long as they're making their money back. I think it could be down to the dev as well, though, because, you know, I don't know much about the game. I know it was on the cover of Edge, so someone's obviously paying attention to it. you know, the Switch at the moment's got a relatively small install base, you know, especially compared to PS4 and any of the other systems. So it could be them thinking, well, you know, there aren't a lot of games on there at the moment. If we whack £10 on the price, you know, people will pay it anyway. It could be that. Is there any idea about, you know, whether that they've set that price themselves? Or
I would say it's more of their decision then. I'd say, because it's not their choice for it to be separate prices between retail and online, but I think it is their decision for, like, the actual price itself, you know.
They must have some control.
Yeah, it shouts out to me that they're not really expecting that many sales on the Switch straight away, and I think their main market's going to be other consoles. That's the only reason I can see them upping the price on it. It's just very strange. But the game does look very, From what I've seen, it's sort of if you put the likes of Wind Waker and Breath of the Wild into one game, I think it would basically describe Ryan in one look.
Yeah, it's got that sort of almost cel-shaded kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the devs must have some control in the eShop, and I say this because there's a game on the 3DS eShop which I always see on sale called, I think it's called Van Helsing Sniper ZX100, right? It's some kind of low-budget shooting game, and the price is £6.66, right? They've obviously done that on purpose. They want that 666 for the price. Now, if they are able to do that, then it's got to be the devs' decision. But I assume they're self-publishing. Because obviously, if it's at retail, then someone's probably going to be publishing it for them.
Yeah, that's what normally happens. But maybe that's what's happening. Maybe they don't have the publisher there. Maybe they are self-publishing, and this is the only way they can get it out. But yeah, it screams odd, I must admit. But the worry is how many developers will do this, and will we be paying premium prices for those games if we can get cheaper elsewhere? It's going to be ongoing issue, I think.
Anyway, moving on, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild has become one of the most critically acclaimed games of all time, boasting a score of 97 on Metacritic. And it's very well deserved.
Definitely, it is. Definitely.
Game of the year?
I think possibly. Possibly.
Yeah. We're only in March, but you know what? I think the only thing that might top it is Mario, possibly. Mm. Terms of quality, although knowing me, it'll probably be Arms that will be my game of the year. You know, I'm not even joking saying that. I am a little bit, but I'm not. I've got a lot of faith in that. But that's just a whole other topic.
Ollie, would you be up in arms if that turns out not to be the case?
Oh, I feel like I've just taken a springman punch to the gut there.
Yeah. Oh God, this is getting worse.
Yeah.
Oh man. Wow. This is really turned.
I'm actually quite fond of that pun, to be honest. I will take full credit for that pun there.
We'll give you that.
My one, yeah.
Don't push
it. It was spring loaded, wasn't it? So.
Yeah. Oh God.
Jesus Wow. Let's just stop the puns.
Zelda. Anyway, yeah. Zelda's pretty good. Yeah. Mm. It's very good. It's very good. It deserves 97. You know, there was all that drama earlier this week about whether it should be at a 98 or not.
Because like it was at a 98, but I think it was Jim Sterling scored it a 7 out of 10. That's what brought it down to 97.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. Yeah. That was.
To be fair,
it
was a fairly fair review, but I do disagree with it, so I don't think it was 7 out of 10 worthy.
He made some legitimate criticisms, and you know, it was a well-written review, but look, at the end of the day, you know, 98, 97, 97 is still, you know, crazily good, and you know, you will see that picture with the, you know, all the 10 out of 10 scores on there. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty impressive in itself, you know. Well, there are obviously going to be a couple of reviews that don't agree, and, you know, that's fair enough.
Yeah, because I think what people forget is that everyone's entitled to their own opinion and stuff, so... And like, you've got to read what the opinions are. If it's something total rubbish, then, yeah, you're going to sort of say, look, really? That's not really a proper sort of criticism at all, but...
The thing with Jim Sterling, it's him and October Biscuit, and they're all PC gamers. So if it doesn't work at 1080 frame like full 60 FPS every time, then it may be interested. And that was the first point he took it down for. But I think legitimately the what he's saying about the weapon system was quite right, to be fair to him. That slowing when you're in combat and your weapon breaks and you have to go back to the menu every time, stretch your weapon to go back out and it breaks again. It's a bit fiddly, and as good as it is, you've got to manage your own sort of inventory and what you can do with it. It does seem like some of these weapons should last longer than they are. Maybe there's some sort of problem there, but I think overall it was quite a fair review. But I think everyone's just targeting him because it's his one review that's actually put a slight score. And it's quite unfair, really.
I definitely think all the stuff with the DDoS and all that, that's totally uncalled for.
Yeah.
But touching on the whole weapons thing briefly, I've seen a lot of people have been saying, oh, you know, you have to go into the menu. I'm wondering, do they realize that if you hold right on the D-pad, you can cycle through your weapons? I kind of wonder if that's not advertised well enough. Because obviously, yeah, you're in a fight, it still pauses when you do that. But I personally, it hasn't given me any hassle. But I think, you know, yeah, if that's got in the way of your enjoyment of the game, fair enough if that's going to affect your review score, you know. In terms of him being kind of PC orientated, you know, I think a good critic wouldn't let that get in the way of their judgment. Yeah. They would just look at it on the hardware that it's on. And if there are technical issues, then, yeah, factor that in, you know. And, yeah, there are, you know, we know there are frame drops. Honestly, looking at the game based on its gameplay, that kind of, for me, would not affect my view of the game. I'd say it's so minor in comparison to everything else that it's not that big a deal.
It's not like it's a massive drop down to like zero then back up again.
But you can still, yeah, the game still functions, you know, you can still play the game. So,
And to do it on that tech it's on is still quite impressive. I mean, when I've played it portably, I think it's been quite spectacular, if I'm honest.
To have that on the go is pretty incredible. Just to add, to have a console quality game, you know, anywhere, you know, on the bus, on the shitter, like in that advert.
Well, I've taken it to work every day this week, and we've all been playing 1-2 Switch and Zelda in the office, so it's been quite nice. But I don't know if I'll do it every day. It's definitely a decent experience to have a. Like we had Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask on 3DS, but this is just a different quality compared to it. There's nothing else I can compare to. Where else are we saying about Zelda? Do you think that people have just gone, right, this is a new console, this game's out, oh, I'm really excited for it, and yeah, it's 10 out of 10 straight away. What would you say, like, are there any other criticisms you could give this game at the moment?
Actually, Jack, for a very good reason, we may have to hold out until our shout-out section, because we did get a question in asking just that.
Oh,
so,
I must be psychic. Yeah. I'll leave you in suspense then.
Right, moving on.
Let's move on.
Yeah. This should be a great time to have a find out after the break.
Yeah.
But, you know, this isn't TV, so there you go.
Anyway, moving on. Overwatch is challenging for the developers, say director Jeff Kaplan, although they are open-minded about the possibility. So, I believe this came about from the Reddit, and he also said that he is loving the Switch, and his second favorite console is the 3DS. So on Reddit he says, "I'm loving the Switch. My second favorite gaming platform of all time is the 3DS." That's quite cool. Getting over Overwatch on the Switch is very challenging for us, but we're always open-minded about exploring possible platforms. So it's not confirmation by any means, but I think this will be quite cool because
it's a possibility.
Idea would be good, but I can't say that's given me much faith because it reminds me a lot of the Wii U, a lot of maybes, a lot of this would be good. We'd love to do this. I mean, weren't there all rumblings about, you know, GTA 5 and stuff back in the Wii U? The Wii U era. I may be wrong there, but I know that, you know, the people, you know, it's easy for these guys to say, yeah, we'd love to do it. And they probably would because it's, you know, it's money. Whether or not it'll actually happen, that's...
I'd rather have Hearthstone, if I'm honest.
No.
God. That would actually work easy.
Jack, just no. No.
No?
Just no.
No, actually, to be fair, you do bring up a good point because, I mean, the touchscreen capability of the Switch would work well for Hearthstone, whereas Overwatch is a very online-heavy game, so it may be best when the Switch is treated as a home console.
But then having it on the go will also, for example, I really liked Splatoon, but I didn't get to play it nearly enough because you were tethered to the TV, and being able to play that anywhere, even in a different room, that'll give you a lot more freedom. And I think a game like Overwatch would benefit from it. It's got that huge fan base. I think really for me, the one thing they should, you know, Blizzard are a company, they're worth a lot of money. Nintendo are worth a lot of money. You know, they like making money. They know how to make money. what Blizzard and Nintendo should do is they should put it on the Switch with the portability, and then it should come out with a line of amiibo for that game, because it's got that Smash Bros. Factor. It's got the characters. That's what people like. You know, people will pay. They will pay for that. They will pay for little figurines of their favorite characters.
Mm. See, I've never actually played Overwatch, but I know that everyone tells me all about the characters they play and why they play them and who's best against the others and stuff. But it means absolutely nothing to me. But I think you're definitely right that like, amiibo figures for like Overwatch would be massive. People would love it.
I could say as an Overwatch player that like they give these characters a lot of meaning and backstory, which like makes it more endearing. And you're right. I probably would say that having those amiibo like in quite good detail as well, like would really appeal cool. to those kinds of people.
You want to sweeten it even more, right? You got your amiibo, you're playing on your Switch, you scan it in, you've got your Nintendo themed skin for every character. There you go. Mm. That's it. Easy money.
Easy money.
The skins are like
Nintendo's marketing department. If they've got a job going, you know, and they feel like
you're there, you're there.
I mean, it's a Zero Suit inspired, well, a Samus inspired one for D.Va. You know, you've got the gunship for the mech, and then you've got the Zero Suit for D.Va's outfit.
There you go.
Is there a big like, robot, like monkey thing? Couldn't you do like
a DK one?
Yeah, DK Winston.
Well, see, what the trick is you come up with an idea like this, so you get inside the company, and then I can finally give Doshin the Giant the Fire Emblem style revival.
Yes! Bring back Doshin.
By the end of next year, you'll be playing Doshin Warriors.
Doshin Warriors. Oh my god, that's
actually
amazing.
Scared. That's the second podcast I've been on in a row where I've managed to talk about Doshin Warriors. So there we go.
Doshin for Smash.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so down for that.
He has so been really interested, to be fair, as like a quirky Nintendo title, so I may have to like pick it out whenever I get the chance.
Oh yeah, have a go. I've got to say, as someone who really likes it, I'd probably it feels like a real 6 out of 10, but it's very very charming, you know. Right. It's very weird. So there you go. That's my recommendation.
Fair enough. Hmm. Right, onto the away from Overwatch and back into, let's switch it back to this thing here. Sorry for that overused phrase. But the Switch has sold over 1.5 million units within its first week, with Breath of the Wild having seen over 1.34 million copies sold. So
was that 90% of
roundabout? Yeah. There's 160,000 people who bought a Switch but didn't buy Breath of the Wild.
Pretty much.
Why?
No, you know why they bought it. They bought it for what's it called, motorbiking in the night sky or whatever. You know,
that,
you
see in that one? Sky. Yeah,
that's the one. That's what they're in. Oh,
there. It's all those Neo Geo owners that their consoles are broken.
They want to buy KOF 94 for the 8th time. You know, that's the. I have actually I've seen people who've straight up said, you know, I bought this with Bomberman. You know.
Yes.
Which I kind of think. Fair enough, if you really like Bomberman, you know.
To be fair,
you're missing out on Zelda, but...
Yeah, but in multiplayer, Bomberman plays really well.
Yeah, it is good fun.
But it is just classic Bomberman, like it was in the original stuff, but with a little bit of HD vibe on top of it. But
we'll talk more about the game in a little bit later, won't we?
Yeah, it's great to see so many sales for the Switch so far. I know their target for the end of this tax year, so the like middle of
end of April. March, isn't it? Yeah, actually, it could be next week. It ends, I think.
It's around in 2 weeks' time, actually, because 2 weeks' time that'll be actual end
of March. Yeah, so this year is 2 million,
wasn't it? 5th of April in UK is the end of the tax.
So, yeah, I don't know what it is in Japan.
I'm not sure either. So,
that's right, it's around some, yeah.
But I know they're aiming for 2 million by the end of there. Which is still quite a target, you know. 500,000 extra sold in the next 2 weeks. I think they'll probably hit it just about.
If they can get the stock out into the stores, then why not?
The problem, because the second week of sales have been reported low, because of stock shortages.
Mm. They've just restocked on the Nintendo UK store just today, I think. So, but it'll be it's like Amazon and supermarkets and stuff. That's where they want to get it, I think. That's where people are going to be buying it from.
At least supply and demand is working. That's the thing. It's not everyone's like missed out massively. They're like it's not as bad as the Wii was when it first came out, and no one could get a Wii console anywhere.
The Wii came out in 2006, didn't it? I don't think I got mine until Christmas 2008, and that was because we couldn't find one. So, you know.
You can shop around. You can probably still pick some up now. I mean, it's don't buy from Kex. Do not buy any console from Kex because they're literally upping every price on theirs at the moment. I swear.
Because they know they can get away with it, probably. That's why.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, just remain patient, I would say, at the moment, if you're waiting for a Switch still. Just keep a lookout for some deals. But, yeah, it's good to see.
Yeah, considering it's March, I think that's pretty good. I mean, look, it could be better. It could be much better. You know, the 3DS did more on the launch week, didn't it? Yes. I don't know the exact number, you know. But coming off the back of the Wii U and considering it's March, I think that's solid. That's decent, you know. They had a good launch title in Zelda as well, so I think that helped.
The 3DS started slow, very slow.
Oh, yeah, very
slow. But then it progressively grew, yeah.
Then they offered the games for free for anyone who bought it up to a certain date, and then they had a bit of a buzz, the ambassador program. But then it slowly grew from there. But so I'm not really expecting it to be soul-struck, because let's be honest, there's only 6 or 7 must-have games in the next month or two.
Yeah, but the first year is looking good, especially in terms of first-party stuff. I mean, Splatoon 2, that I think in Japan, that'll be when the console launches. You know, there are TV adverts for the test fire.
Yeah,
you know,
when
they're advertising a game's beta on TV, that pretty much kind of says it all. Obviously, Mario will be the big one. I think Mario Kart as well will probably shift a few units. It's almost a shame that isn't coming out at the end of this month, because that could possibly...
Everywhere, advertised everywhere at the moment.
Yeah, especially here in the UK, I know for certain. That's pretty much the only game I've seen advertised.
Well, I think the thing with Mario Kart is it's one of the very few games that reaches out to such a broad audience, because it's one that everyone wants to play when they see the Switch. I think because Zelda is great, you know, we have all these other great games coming out, but Mario Kart is the one that everyone wants to play because it's just such a simple multiplayer game. You know,
and especially with the whole two people on the Switch screen, them showing the adverts, that is, I think, will be very appealing to families.
I think it's a weird one, though, because this is the first, Mario Kart that's basically had a reboot, in a way.
Yeah.
As in, it's an upgrade from a previous version. Yeah. I think this is going to have a weird sales sort of style, kind of point. It's really odd whether it will do well or not. I can't really explain it.
I think it will do well regardless, because, I mean, over half of Wii U owners, I'd say probably even over 60% of all Wii U owners owned Mario Kart 8. So I think Switch will end up selling more than the Wii U. So I think Mario Kart 8 Deluxe will have the potential to just sell a lot, and especially because it's right near launch, it has just that, you know, big factor, you know. So
I think it was actually the best-selling Wii U game.
Yeah,
Mario Kart, best-selling.
And Mario Kart Wii was the best-selling game on the Wii, I think. It is a huge seller. It's probably one of their biggest multiplayer titles, much bigger than Smash Bros. even though that's got the kind of hardcore following. I mean, we talked about this briefly before recording, but so are you going to be double dipping, or is this your first time?
I will be double dipping eventually. It depends. I may get it at launch, I may not. It depends on what my plans are.
Go on, Jack.
So you go for your first time. I've got something to say. Anyway, so you go first.
Well, no, I will be getting Mario Kart again for the second time. But to be honest, I'm not really bothered by that, because I'll be getting a game I love anyway, which I can then play on the go. So, and with all the extra stuff as well. And then we never know. We might even see more interesting things be launched as well. Because, they said, that's all the DLC from the Wii U, but you never know, might even see even more, because, Do you know what I mean? It's something yeah. that has the possibility to grow even more if they're bringing it over yeah, again.
It's trying to drag the stragglers still on the Wii U look, to say, look, here's the Switch. We're going to put Mario Kart, we're going to put Splatoon on here. There's going to be a new Mario game coming soon, which are already on the Wii U, which we're going to move on to the Switch as well. Why don't you come over and play this new console? And that's what Mario Kart and Splatoon's main objective is, to get many of those players on from the previous console onto this console. And I think they're going to do well out of it. But I'm worried that Mario Kart on its own won't be as successful as they want it to be.
Why do you think that?
I just think the fact that there are so many people that already bought the DLC with the game. And they've already experienced everything. Okay, we got Battle Mode, which is great, and some new stages and new characters, and amongst other things. But I just don't know if there's enough there to make some people buy it again.
Yeah. See, that's why I'm not double dipping. You know, honestly, if they'd added two more cups of four like racetracks, I would have been there day one. But yeah, I'm Battle Mode isn't enough of an incentive for me, and I can, I played it at the premiere event, and I tried out the Splatoon characters, and it's obvious, you've got the same level of quality here that you had with the base game and with the DLC. They've added Battle Mode in, which people really wanted, and I think that's great, especially because I think it's because of the nature of the console. I think it'll be more appealing to people for multiplayer.
It'd be great.
And there's a bigger audience potentially as well.
Yes, definitely. It'd be great for local play. If you can get this 8 players sort of thing going in like groups and things, yes, it's gonna be brilliant for battle mode. But how often are you gonna play battle mode online and stuff as well?
In past games, I haven't really played it at all. It's for some people that is Mario Kart and that's it. Yeah. And it's great that it's in there. And I think but I think another big kind of differentiator is, you look at Splatoon 2 and, it's easy to draw comparisons to Splatoon 1 because the core game is exactly the same. Yes. And I think you have to remember that Splatoon's still a very, very young IP. It's only been around for a couple of years. The game doesn't need a huge overhaul it's still, a lot of people haven't played it. And the people who have are kind of, it's still new, it's new in people's minds. But with Mario Kart 8, it's Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. This is an upgraded version. It's a kind of, I guess you call it an enhanced port. So I'm wondering, should they have done more to accommodate people who have brought it on Wii U and have bought the DLC?
Because
that's just not economical. But
even like a discount or something, like a fiver off, I'd be like, okay, that's fair enough. At least more incentive for me to go and buy it.
Yeah, and it's not that I think the quality means it isn't worth buying again, because I think you have to factor in the platform. And, if I was in a situation, if I was in a circumstance where I knew I was going to be playing multiplayer all the time, then I probably would pick it up because I think that would be a good enough reason, But for some people, that will be the way it is, they'll think, oh, great, this is a brilliant multiplayer title,
I think end of last year, it sold 8.26 million copies. So they'd be stupid not to put it onto the next.
There's a couple of key Wii U titles that, there have been rumblings about Mario Maker and Smash Bros. I think Mario Maker in particular, I think they'd be stupid not to port that because that's a game with the level of quality, the production values of that game. The amount of people who've missed out on that, the potential audience is huge, And the 3DS obviously got it, but that was a kind of chopped down version. It kind of took out the main feature, really, playing other people's levels, or one of the main features.
I'd like to see how Splatoon plays in portable mode, because if you remember having it on the Wii U, you had to use the pads, and you could use the motion controls and that, like, tilt the direction where you were firing at, which is great. But if you're in portable mode on the Switch, while looking at the screen, you're going to be trying to look at the screen while tilting it all over the place. Will that be as comfy?
It works all right in Zelda, I guess. But you're kind of adjusting your shot. You're getting that precision with an arrow. I didn't try it on the portable mode at the event. I played it with a pro controller,
Maybe I missed it. But
No, cause the guy I was with played it on the screen. He said it felt all right. But he isn't someone who'd played it loads on the Wii U. So I don't know if he'd be able to make a great comparison. Okay. But you'd hope it'd run all right because you think it's obviously been designed with the hardware in mind. You know, and they've shown it in all the trailers, but I guess that's not, you know, we'll have to, I suppose the test fire, you know, which is next weekend, that'll be the time to find out how it feels. So yeah. Find out whether or not my internet connection will actually bloody work with the thing.
I wonder if they learned from last time when it just completely dropped for a while and they struggled a little bit, didn't they?
Well, it started really empty and barren and then they slowly developed extra weapons, extra content into it, and it was brilliant. The more they added to it, the better it got. And it was just
that's my regret, was not playing more of it, really, because they really, you know, did build on it. And yeah. I love the kind of world that they've built around it, you know, and that kind of, it's got that kind of streetwear thing, the kind of fashion emphasis, and it's just like, it's got a good aesthetic to it. You know, it's a brand new IP, so I'm very enthusiastic about it.
I just hope there's more Splatfest more often, because they for me were the best part of the game when it went into sort of a night mode and all the
give it a nice charm.
It was definitely a lot more.
It's almost as if killing those off was kind of like saying, right, get ready because, you know, we've got a new one on the go. But they should have had them right up until the launch of Splatoon 2 maybe or before. You know, they got to keep these going. That's how people will come back. But the idea of building on it, it's the kind of game that lends itself well to it. It's very online focused, multiplayer focused.
Anyway, that was going to be our next news topic, but I think we covered like a good chunk. So basically, early this week they just put out a trailer just saying, oh, it comes with all DLC, all 48 tracks.
Gold Mario.
Mario. Originality at its finest.
So you have to beat every 200cc cup to get him, right? So I'm never going to get him, basically.
That's impossible. Surely.
Well, I guess you could always use that. What's the driving assist that they've added? So the kids can stay on the road.
That's
like a dirty victory, you know? That's like you bribe Lackey to or something, you know? It's like you're cheating.
What's with the battle mode, Matt? There's new modes added to it?
Yeah, so there are five battle modes altogether. So there's Sand and Balloon Battle, there's Coin Runners, which returns from Mario Kart Wii, the Shine Thief, which is sort of like King of the Hill, but on the move. So as long as
Double Dash.
So that comes from Double Dash. Bob and Blast comes from Double Dash. And now there's a brand new one called Renegade Roundup, which is sort of like Cops and Robbers. If you haven't seen it. I think it's pretty cool because one team are the Renegades and they're just trying to run around the place, but the others act as the cops and they have piranha plants attached to the side of them. So the cops need to eat up the Renegades and they trap them in like a flying cage and then the Renegades' teammates have to race under them to hit a switch and then to free them. So yeah, I think that would be a really fun mode. I think all of them would be really fun actually.
Yes, I'm glad that they've got so many because I suppose the past games it's basically been you've got your balloon battle and then you've got some kind of collecting mode really, and that was it. Normally it was two. I think we had two modes.
Yeah, we had two modes.
Five battle mode stages. I thought there'd be a few more.
There are five modes and eight stages, but yeah.
Oh, eight courses. Okay. Yeah, and
I was hoping for something on Wii's level, but I think what we have is still pretty good.
I wish there were a few more classic stages.
But you can still play on all the tracks on Battle Mode as well, can't you?
I'm
guessing that a lot of these game modes have been built around those new tracks, so maybe you can do the blue battle.
I'm not sure.
Shine Thief could be really good on the race track.
Too big.
See, now this is it. They've listened to people and got rid of that. It can't go back to it now. You know, you got to stick with what they've given us now. I didn't personally play Battle Mode anyway, so I didn't kick up much of a fuss. But I'm glad it's back. The thing I'm really looking forward to the most is the music. That's what I'm interested in.
Fair enough.
The music in the game is proper fantastic.
Oh yeah,
outstanding. Yeah,
I've got it right here on my desk here. Actually, it's a really good soundtrack.
Nice. It's the remixes. I'm interested in hearing the battle SNES battle mode theme. I want to see what they do with it.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Next piece of news.
Next.
Bye Bye Box Boy, which is the last in the Box Boy series, is arriving next week on the 23rd of March for the 3DS eShop.
Here we go, talking of game of the year. Here it is. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, I've seen some of your thoughts, actually. I've seen some of your excitement on Twitter, and I think a couple of others from Source Gaming are quite excited for this as well.
Yeah.
Everyone I've spoken to about Box Boy in general, I've said how fantastic it is, but I just don't get it. I don't understand.
It's very simple. It's very charming. It's got, you know, it feels very well thought out anyway, but...
Yeah. It's very clever. Don't get me wrong. It's very clever. I don't think I could sit there playing it for ages. It's one of those I could definitely come back to every now and then.
Yeah, but, it's got kind of bite-sized, you know, small puzzles. But I think for me, what it is, you know, I really like the smaller, the kind of weirder Nintendo IP. So to see an IP like this be successful on the eShop, get three games, get an amiibo, which I'm really sour isn't coming to the West, that hurts. You know, to see it be successful, to see HAL do something that isn't Kirby, basically, and be successful with it, I think that's great. And I think it's good for the eShop as well, you know, as a whole, that a game like that can have some kind of success. You know,
he must have done well, because hasn't he got an amiibo as well?
Yeah, that's right. It hasn't been. It's only released in Japan at the moment, and there's no word on it coming to the West, which is a little bit.
Yeah, because I believe the amiibo unlocked content is locked through another method in the game.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it's actually linked if you've got save data from the last two games.
Oh,
then it unlocks it. They've got a demo out at the moment which has levels from all three games, which I thought was quite clever.
I love that games are doing this now, though.
Yeah,
but it's like the original Bandit because the like Swap and Shop, and it's actually happening now.
Okay. Yeah, except you've got more than like what is it, half a second to do it. Deal with that. You have to be inhumanely quick because they try to patch it out or something. Is that right?
Yeah, the original thing was to swap the Nintendo cartridges when it put in the 64, and it just never come to fruition because people would have died. So, you know. But yeah, it's nice to see that game. It's like Zelda. Using Wolflink as well, like the fact you had to unlock him on Twilight Princess, then move into the new Zelda Breath of the Wild. Things like that, I think, are absolutely brilliant. I wish they did more stuff like that.
Yeah, it gives you a real incentive to kind of
play
loads of games. I remember in Mario Kart Wii, if you had Mario Galaxy save data, you unlock Rosalina straight away. It's little things like that that kind of you know, it's nice when the games work together.
Alright.
More of that, please, Nintendo. More of that.
Give us more free
stuff.
And wrapping
more
yourself,
amiibo.
Wrapping us off with the new section, we have a lot of indies to go through. So a couple of days before the Switch's release, Nintendo put out a Nindies showcase. So they showed off a lot of Nindies coming to the Switch.
There's a lot.
There's over 60 titles in development from indie development.
Is there really that many?
Boy, I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some real good quality games there as well.
Yeah.
Stuff is really good.
Yeah, so like even on day one, we had Shovel Knight and Fast Racing RMX. So already that's like two big hitters in the indie scene. So I think it's...
Yeah, the games that Nintendo have actually kind of pushed them. So I think that's what's great about this is Nintendo are actually making a real effort to work with these devs and get their games on there. And it's really showed because there are so many of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a good amount that like I've got from here. So, well, Snake Pass is coming out in about a couple of weeks, I believe. That looks pretty cool.
I've heard really good things about Snake Pass.
Yeah, see, this kind of rare 3D platformer revival seems to be going down quite well. You know, I'll be honest, I've never played Banjo-Kazooie, so I can't People seem really happy about this. So, you know.
There's one other person in this world that hasn't played Banjo-Kazooie. I'm quite happy with that.
Hey.
What?
Wait.
Come on, guys. You need to go. Right, you all need to go and play Banjo-Kazooie
as Brits.
Stop the podcast. We're off. We're going to go play Banjo-Kazooie.
I'm just looking at the list that they mentioned on the Nindie Showcase. So, Overcooked looks pretty cool. It makes a fun.
That would be great for multiplayer. I've heard really good things about
it. It reminds me of the Lickitung mini game in Pokemon Stadium, which is a good thing.
I was going to say, it's a very specific example. I'm not one I know anything about, but...
Right, the Lickitung minigame is basically involves you shooting Lickitung's tongue out onto a table of food where he continues to eat it. And you have to eat certain bits of food to get points to win. And it kind of seemed the same sort of style and way you're making food and delivering it kind of thing. It was really weird, but really cool.
I think games like that are really at home on a Nintendo system.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is there anything on this list that you're really excited for? Anyone? Ollie, do you want to...
There's one title in particular. Now, I'm a real kind of... I never left the mourning period after Advance Wars Days of Ruin came out
and the series ended.
I'm actually working on something about Advance Wars at the moment because I'm really like a big fan of the kind of characters.
Yes.
Right.
Thank
and
you,
I really
someone else.
The second I saw Wargroove, I was like, okay, all right, we've got someone who's kind of they're coming for that Advance Wars shaped hole in my heart. But like, as I saw more of the units and stuff and more of the ideas they had there and that kind of creativity, I was sold, you know. I'm definitely looking forward to that. I think that Advance Wars has been gone for too long. Sadly, it sold pretty poorly. I don't think any of the games in the series sold over a million copies, and that's kind of what spelled its death.
But the first one was one of the best rated Nintendo games ever. So,
I've read about it in books and stuff. You know, it's really like it's kind of very critically acclaimed. I really like the sequels. I wasn't too keen on Days of Ruin because I preferred the original art style. I prefer it being a bit more colourful.
Have you ever played the Famicom version of Wars? By the way,
I haven't played the Famicom ones or the there was the ones on the Game Boy. Some of them were developed by Hudson, who did Bomberman and Adventure Island and games like that. Mario Party? Oh, yeah. And of course, yeah, they did some of the Mario Parties as well, yeah. I think they were quite different. They didn't have that kind of character thing. Yeah, they didn't have the different commanding officers. I know that actually, this is something I've written a little bit about, in one of the Super Famicom, I think it probably was Super Famicom Wars, They introduced commanding officers and they were all parodies of real life figures. Definitely very un-Nintendo. I think that one of the commanding officers is called Hitler. There's a kind of money making one called Billy Gates. It's very very 90s. I'm not sure if I want to see the series go back to that, but I want to see it back.
Bring back Billy Gates.
Yeah, bring back, that's it. Smash Bros. Billy Gates, and Hitler. They'd be perfect.
I'd love to have an orange star team, that character for Smash Bros.
It'd be good. I'm not sure how it would work, but I just really want to see that series kind of have some kind of revival. And Wargroove actually really looked to me like it was capturing the spirit of it, rather than it just because you know I've seen games that have kind of tried to fill that gap, and they've kind of taken the gameplay, but they haven't really captured the visual sort of charm. And I think Wargroove looks like it's going to do that. So I'm definitely interested in that.
Sam, is there any games on the list that you're really interested in?
Oh, you know, I'm a big indie fan. There's so many. Oh, just
There is one that I think we both need to get is Duck Game.
Yeah, I love Duck Game. It's just Duck so awesome. Stupid, but funny at the same time. Just as a button, just for quack, I'm just like, yeah, why not?
Sold. Have you picked up? You're going to pick up Shovel Knight?
I've already got Shovel Knight.
You've got Shovel
Knight. I already have the Shovel Knights. The Shovel Knights treasure trove, so I got it all.
Yay!
You got that third campaign coming soon. Whenabouts is that? Any idea?
What the? The Knight or the King Knight.
No, there's a new one coming, isn't it? Is it King Knight? Is that it?
It's King Knight, yeah. I think it's a little while before we have King Knight, but soon,
knowing that's coming
soon.
Though, you know. I think Yacht Club have really they've had a huge success with that game, and I think it was really deserved. And I'm glad that they've actually kept the content coming, and they've been really good with the fans. So I'm happy to see that on Switch. You know, even though it's on every single console now, basically. I think, I don't know if it's on Ouya. It's on Amazon Fire TV. So if you fancy playing any games on that, I won't be double dipping.
Beyond though, I don't care that I double dipped on that. I was just like, it's worth it. It's just worth it.
Yeah.
Matt, is there anything on the list for you?
Runner 3. Pretty
solid. Yes, Runner 3.
Choice Provisions, they always deliver.
Because was Runner 2 on the... I think it was on 3DS. Was it on the Wii U?
It was on the Wii U. That's where I played Runner 2, yeah.
It was really... was it on 3DS? I don't know if it was.
Can't remember.
I think the original was... when it was Bitrit Runner, was they released a compilation, didn't they?
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
They did release a saga for the 3DS, but like my only experience with it so far was the second one, The Future Legend of Rhythm Alien. It was just so bizarre, but it's just
good subtitles.
Really good, yeah.
Great game. Really, if you love the really weird music, you'll like... What's the best way to describe it? It's
kind of experimental, I suppose. It's got these weird themes. You know, that's what they do at Choice Revisions. I keep almost calling them Gaijin games, but they're not called that anymore. It's strange to see how that series has evolved, because obviously the Bitrit series has had six entries, didn't it? Six or seven entries.
Yeah,
Runner was the game that really stood out, and you know, I remember I read a review of it back in ONM. Rest in peace. I kind of just downloaded it on a whim, knowing nothing about it, and I've kind of followed that series ever since. So.
It's more now that Commander Video, the characters seem to be popping into other people's games as well.
He was in Smash Bros. As a trophy. That was a real surprise.
Yeah, I mean, fair play to them for doing that. I mean, it's normally him. Him and loads of other indie games. What's the one?
Shovel Knight, Shantae, the guy from Mutant Muds. He's
Meat Boy. Meat Boy as well. They always seem to pop up in the same sort of game.
He's yet to come to a... Is he yet to come to a Nintendo console? Is that right?
I don't think so.
Sorry, who was this?
He didn't come... Meat Boy.
Meat Boy.
He didn't come out Wii. That was a big source of controversy.
He may have came out of the Wii U. I definitely remember something.
I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, I think Super Meat Boy did come to the Wii U.
Runner 2 did have a connection to Nintendo, though.
Yeah. Charles Martinet. Is that it?
The voice of Mario was the voice in Runner 2.
Yeah, the narrator. Wow. He did a good job in that. It was funny. Yeah. It did come out on Wii U, yeah. I didn't know that. There you go. Came out last year. So.
So you'll be picking that up then?
Yeah, probably Runner 3, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Also, just quickly, Flipping Death looks like it could be really neat. And Pocket Rumble. Pocket Rumble looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
I really want that. Pocket Rumble. For a small 2D fighter, it looks really, really good. I mean, it's sort of using like old Neo Geo fighting game sort of graphics set, and It just looks great. I don't know why. It's just one of those. It's really simple. You can take the Switch. You have it on the Switch. You put it on the side. You take the two controllers off. Straight away, you have a battle with one of your mates. Quick and easy. Done.
Yeah, I think the thing about fighting games is because obviously you know you've got all the kind of precision you need with the, and obviously the Joy-Con is a kind of controller that's probably you know you're not going to see people playing Street Fighter at Evo with a Joy-Con, but. Yeah. A game that's a bit more scaled back, like Pocket Rumble, that almost obviously it's on PC, but it's kind of designed around the Switch a bit more. Because I think they did say it's a console exclusive for the Switch.
Yes, so
they've obviously Nintendo gone after them and had, you know, I'm sure they've had some insight into it. You know, something that's a bit more crafted around those controllers, I think, will work really well as a multiplayer game.
I think so.
I believe a lot of the indies featured have like some sort of Nintendo exclusivity, be it a timed release, some sort of content, or just exclusivity overall.
Yeah.
So I think that's really promising for the platform.
Just two quick ones to sort of shout out on here. Stardew Valley That is going to be perfect for the Switch console, I think, especially in local play and multiplayer and that. Just for a bit of fun, you know, just take a bit of pick out your friends and then go and say hi.
Yeah, it could fit nicely into that kind of portable, like Animal Crossing Harvest Moon kind of category, which is a kind of, I guess there's a sort of gap in the market there, really. I mean, they're still making Harvest Moon games. The quality of those is up for debate. But I think that'll be a popular one. That's a good fit.
Yeah. Mr. Shifty is also a...
Yeah.
Basically, a sort of a sequel to Hotline Miami 1 and 2, made by the same people.
Kind of spiritual successor, sort of thing.
Spiritual successor to him.
He's got that same kind of sort of the top-down thing.
Very good game. Interesting. So I'm definitely looking.
One more game I have to mention is SteamWorld Dig 2.
Yeah, I was going
to
say
that looks good. I really got into the first one, and SteamWorld Heist was fantastic as well. Yeah, one of the absolutely. Best games of the year when that came out. The guys at Image and Form are really good as well. So
yeah,
I'm always enthusiastic about what they come out with.
I met a few of their guys at EGX one year, and they're all so kind and nice to explain their game so well. It was a real praise of that team. Really good. And then I think that's pretty much covered most of the ones on there. I think Toe Jam and Hell to be on there, though. Oh, man, what a game. What a game.
I bet you, if you went back to the 90s and said Toe Jam and Earl was going to be on a Nintendo system, you know, you'd get beaten up in the playground, wouldn't you?
Nice. And of course, Binding of Isaac as well. I've got to have a shout out for Binding of Isaac because I know someone who's worked on the art for the Switch version of that game.
Right.
I've been told that I have to buy that game, so we'll do that.
All right, and... With that covers it for the news, and let's move on to the next section. So here we are in what I've been playing. Ollie, as our guest for this week, why don't you start us off with the game we've all been playing?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's just very kind of cliche now. I mean, I guess if you listen to loads of podcasts, you've definitely heard about this game before. Obviously, it's Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. I wasted my opportunity there. I could have just said the name of some other game, you know.
Through the Night Sky.
Ah, too late now.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on from that missed opportunity. It's just fucking fantastic, isn't it? I had to swear for effect. Let's be honest.
Of course you do. It's Breath of the Wild.
They described it as a masterpiece, and, you know, that's a big word. But I really think it actually lives up to that kind of...
Yeah.
That title,
really,
you know, and I'm kind of a little bit ashamed to admit, but then I also play it off based on my kind of lifestyle. I've somehow managed to put, I think, about 115 hours into it in the space of 2 weeks.
Wow.
Which is crazy. I don't really think there's a game that's made me do that before. But I've kind of enjoyed every minute of it, really.
I like every time you find something new, it's just like, I didn't know you could do that.
Sense of wonder. I really don't want to use this word to describe it as a fantasy game because it's really, really horrible and kind of cliche, but it's just kind of magical sometimes where, like, you stumble upon something, you know, and it captures that sense of exploration very well, that sense of...
Yeah, the whole adventuring into the game, and you can go and explore different areas whatever way you want. There's a little bit of... You can go this direction if you want, but you can just basically go and do it however you want to.
It's kind of like if you go here, something's going to happen, but it's getting there. It's almost like the kind of, it's that concept of the journey is more important than the destination.
I think
you're
have to
walk in somewhere and you'll see something in the distance and you just go there, you know. And
I have to bring up a point though. One of my friends made, like, especially for like, he hadn't played, no, he does play a fair bit of Zelda, but when you start off, the sense of freedom isn't totally correct to a point, because you start off, you've basically got barely anything to sort of protect you and stuff, and you go off and you want to go off somewhere, just everything is gonna kill you within seconds. And you really don't actually have a sense of I'm gonna go anywhere. It's more like you kind of have to start collecting and building and growing. And this is what, as I've said, like, you got to give it a chance because, like, yeah, things are going to kill you really quickly because they're really strong. But you it sort of gives you, like, right, okay, I died, so maybe I need to go off somewhere else and, like, get a bit stronger here first before I then go back to this area. So it gives you a sense of trial and error as well, though.
No, I think it's actually that first area, which is obviously the bit they used in the demo. So everyone would have kind of seen that quite a bit already. Yeah. You know, people followed it. I think it actually, the way it kind of, it teaches you those core mechanics, and it does it very quickly, and it does it quite effectively. There is an element of trial and error, so you say, okay, can I do this? And I think the great thing about it is a lot of the time you can do what you think you can do. Or you'll see something and think, oh yeah, I can cut down this tree and, you know, make a bridge, or you know, oh, you know, this weather will affect this enemy, that sort of thing. But yeah, obviously it does kind of guide you a bit, you know. I would say though that for a Nintendo game, which people often complain about being very kind of handholdy,
it doesn't,
you know,
guide
you, I don't think it has that. I think it really kind of throws you into it. The only thing it really does is confine you to an area. But I think a bit of guidance is necessary.
Not to spoil it anyway, even like boss battles and things, there's no specific way to beat them.
Yeah.
You can do it you want to, kind of thing. You
know, just beat them.
That's one of the problems with Zelda games. It's like you go into the dungeon, you get said item in dungeon, that means that item must be used to beat the boss.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But I guess the environment as well is a lot more open, so you can use that to your advantage.
So far, I've not experienced that specifically in this game, but, you know, it's there are certain items that are stronger against some enemies other than others. So, you know, it's however you want to use it. But I think that's brilliant. They've taken the linear part of Zelda and they said, you know what, cut it up in pieces and throw it away and do whatever you want.
they've taken bits and they've put it into a scenarios and made it work really well. Mm. And they filled in the gaps with just small little details that really, like, there are things that kind of, when you think about them, they make a lot of sense. Like, I don't want to get too specific because it's these small moments that will really bring you a lot of joy when you're playing the game. But it might be something like, okay, you look at the environment around you and you use a certain weapon or an ability that has a certain element, perhaps, and you realize, hold on a minute, this thing has an effect on that thing. Yeah. And it's kind of these small things that they make a lot of sense and they kind of take into account kind of real world factors. But what's amazing about it is someone's actually thought about those tiny little things, those little details, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That really make the world feel kind of whole, I suppose.
I think
there's just
I think, like, that is a good way of putting it. It's just, it is just like this world does feel one complete thing, not just sectioned off. But yeah, I think I've just had just a good time exploring for the most part, because there is somewhat of a story, but, like, even then I just get sidetracked. It's like, oh, I want to explore this whole other region which is on the opposite side of the actual place I need to go.
It's the fact you can see the whole map and you can set yourself markers, like, okay, there's a volcano over there, I'm going to go explore that later on.
Yeah.
And then you get find out how far that volcano actually is to get to. And it's like you get distracted by other things.
You see it in the distance and you think it's a straight walk. But this is it. You'll say, oh, I'm going to go over there. And when you get there, you'll see something else. And then you mark
4 hours
that.
Later.
but there's also the element of, like, the world doesn't feel empty either. Because it's like, especially in comparison to the Hyrule Fields of Ocarina of Time and Twilight Princess, it doesn't feel like a pain just to get from point A to point
that
B.
That was one of my criticisms of Twilight Princess, is that the Hyrule Field in that is quite open, but there's just nothing there.
It's bigger. It was almost big for the sake of being big, like bigger than it needs to be. I think the big difference between previous Zelda games is kind of open worlds and other open world games is, it's not so much the scale, because when you look at the map for Breath of the Wild, you're going to think, okay, this is a massive game. You know, there's so much to explore. I'm never going to see it all in my lifetime, that kind of thing. But what's impressive to me about it isn't the size, but it's the scope. It's not how big the world is, but it's what actually fills it. Mm-hmm. And it's the fact that you kind of, you go to places where, like, in another open world game, there'd just be nothing there. It's literally just scenery, you know. But you always will find something, some little thing, some kind of little environmental quirk, you know. It doesn't necessarily have to be an item or a puzzle. It's just little things about the world, the way it's designed, that kind of keep you on your toes. And it really feels very kind of handcrafted, the whole experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we're talking about characters, can we agree on this one thing? The best character, Prince Sidon.
No.
No.
Well, we're getting into it. We should give some kind of warning, you know. If you don't want to know about that character,
okay.
Just name.
Yeah, it's quite difficult to spoil him without spoilers.
Just know he's an awesome character. That's all you need to know, and then just experience how great a character he is.
Why not, Sam? Cass is a much better character.
Cass is pretty cool.
Is that the
now you know, I've played for 100 hours, and you're naming names, and I'm not even sure I remember them.
He's the accordion player.
He's pretty good. I think as a whole, the characters feel, because they're quite spread out. Like you've got these, you know, you've got towns, but they're like, it's not kind of.
They have a lot of charm.
They feel a lot more like handcrafted, and
they feel like towns.
They've got like unique styles and kind of cultures to them almost.
There's people moving about inside them and doing things.
There's almost, you can see there are kind of routines to the characters, the way they go about their day, you know, what time they go to bed, and those little things really kind of, other games just wouldn't have done that. I think a reason they've managed to achieve that is partially because of Nintendo's kind of seemingly infinite amount of money.
The only time I've seen that is in games like Fallout and what's the other one called? Skyrim, stuff like that. It's not the same degree.
Yeah, I suppose in a game like that, though, there's more of an emphasis on characters than, say, Grand Theft Auto, you know, where it's just randomly generated NPCs, you know. So that's why, you know, you'd expect a little bit of that in there. But Zelda does it well. I think, you know, the writing seems good as well for the most part.
What I wanted to find out, actually, is, like, we all started at the same point. You complete this, what's called the tutorial area at the moment.
Mm.
Great plateau, yeah.
What did you all do at that point? Because I reckon we've all gone down different things.
The first place I went to was Kakariko Village. That was my destination. That probably took me like a good 5 hours, I'd say, altogether. Probably.
It's a long old route, isn't it?
Because like, when you think about it, it's not actually that long of a route. But because it's just like so many things...
Yeah.
On that way, it's like enemy camps. There was this bit of like ruins of an old town that I wanted to explore. There were the jewel peaks. That took me ages to climb. But there were two shrines.
I didn't go back there until quite later on. You know, this is a thing. There was so much to see on the route.
Yeah.
When you finally arrive at you get to the stable just past Dueling Peaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of a good way. To put it is Austin Walker, the guy from a former Giant Bomb, right? So he wrote a really good article for Waypoint, and the way he described it was he kind of, when he got to that stable, he kind of, it was the first time a game had made him feel like a traveler at rest, and I think that's a really nice way of putting it, because I went there and spent some time there just being there, you know, and taking that kind of, taking that area in. I didn't have to go straight to my destination. I took my time getting a feel for the area, talking to all the people. And I think it's just kind of, other games would probably do something similar, but I don't know. I guess it really just stood out in Zelda.
It really makes you feel like you are that character. You are like.
It feels like a journey. Like it captures, you know, the adventure, I guess. That's it, you know.
But just from explaining that, then, Matt, the fact you said you've climbed the top of the Jewel Peaks there, I went straight through the middle bit. I didn't go anywhere near the top.
I've been through the middle bit, but that's a great thing, because like you can, if you want, just go through straight to the middle. But then like you could also take the long way to see what's up there.
I would suggest you go through there, because there is a shrine which is important. But yeah, the fact we've considered like different ways of doing things straight away, you can go wherever you want to go. You don't have to follow the source straight away.
You could go, theoretically, you know, you don't even have to follow that path, really. You could kind of head in any direction.
What I did is I followed the story up to get into Kakariko Village and did a bit there, and then I sort of carried on and I thought, I don't really want to do this at the moment. So I just went and had a, I explored all the towers I could get to. Now, there's a few there which are quite difficult to get to and to reach the top when you're at the starting sort of level game. But there are just so many different areas to the game. It's like, you can't have expected it, because most Zelda games do have these specific different areas.
There are so many things.
There's just so much variety in them. I just wasn't expecting it, you know?
And it's almost, one of the great things is it's not just like, okay, here's the snow area, here's the desert area. There are different kind of like biomes within each region. It just kind of makes it, actually makes it, basically makes it feel like a, like an actual kind of world. You know, it's not just like, all right, here's the city, here's the desert, you know, here's the forest.
They sort of develop into each other as well, because there's like canyons and rock formations which then turn into the desert area. Mm. And the way it's sort of developed around, it's really, really well done. Mm. But little things like when you're in the desert, you're going to need to have potions to stop the heat.
It's combating the different areas as well. Like, you can't just go waltz in and be like, oh yeah, it's fine. It's like, you've got to deal with the cold and deal with the heat and the fire and like going off and finding.
You have to prepare for where you're going.
Exactly.
I think I'm gonna even make a spoiler, kind of just going for this minor little thing, because I know how
spoiler.
People are with this game. There we go. Thanks for covering my ass there. You've got to be careful. You know, there are people who, you know, like, they've dedicated their whole lives to not interacting with this game. You know,
I've tried my best to avoid all videos and everything before playing it, and it was so hard, especially when
I bet you it was rewarding, wasn't it?
It was rewarding, definitely. I mean, I played the demo, so I got the small tutorial, and that's all I knew of the game.
The demo didn't sell me on the game, because I knew the feeling I got from it was I have to spend more time with this to really sort of experience it.
Yeah.
But quickly going back to my spoiler, which you kindly announced for me. So today I was in a kind of snow area, and it was one of these areas where it's very, very cold. So you're going to freeze to death if you stay out in the cold. But I realized that I was kind of there, and I wasn't dying. And I actually realized that the reason that I wasn't dying was because I had a kind of fire-based sword on my back, and it was actually keeping me warm. Someone's actually stopped and thought about that, and that's what I think is really special about it.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, it's like this other bit as well. It's like, just in case if you lost the item or whatever, is to connect the electrical currents between two points. As long as you have enough metal weapons, you could use... just line up those metal weapons and you still get a current. So I'm
there's ways of cheating the system, but and they kind of, maybe they're not intentional, but the way the game's designed makes you feel like if you do kind of, you do something a bit differently, you know, you break the rules a little bit, then you kind of, the world makes you feel like you've, I don't know, it makes you feel good about it, I suppose. Mm.
It's like,
you don't think, oh, I've broken the game, you know, oh, look at me, you know, you actually think, oh, you know, so there's a different approach to this, you know.
Yeah.
As we're still in spoiler territory, can I just say, freaking dragons, oh my god.
I'm staring at one right now.
Freaking dragons.
Yeah, I remember seeing, you know, like...
When I first saw one of them, I was freaked out, like, I thought, oh, fuck, I'm dead.
Never... You know, but... I've used a snapshot button so much for this.
I remember.
Yeah, actually, that's one of my minor disappointments is that the in-game camera, you can't save those pictures.
No,
I think that's a disappointment.
There's ways around it, but I don't think.
I've had a lot of moments where, like, I've just been in awe of, like, just simply looking at the game, whether it be like a certain enemy, a certain fear, a certain environment, you know. I think
when you climb to the top of anywhere and then just look down, like,
just look around you, you know.
Any view from that point is like, wow, just how?
if I ever show someone the game for the first time, I always have to go back to that beginning point, because I feel like that's a really sort of, I don't know, it's a good thing to see when you first start playing. I think it really Well, it was in all the trailers. It was in all the trailers and stuff, wasn't it? You know, so.
It's just, it looks one of the most stunning looking games I think I've seen in a long time.
It's got a great art style. It's even if the graphics aren't, you know, 100%, you know, I don't know, 1080p and all the specifics, you know, I think you can kind of
appreciate.
You can almost overlook it because it makes up for it in style.
I think, have we been talking about Zelda too long?
There's no sense.
It's probably deserving of the attention.
But just to keep this podcast after under 2 hours. It does.
What was the question? There was
about 20 minutes or so. Why don't you ask get the question?
All right. So this comes from Colin Crompton, who's a good friend of the show. He comes from the Nintendo 40s podcast.
Hello, Colin. I'm waving. Hello.
He asks, so we know Zelda is awesome, but what is the one thing you guys like the least about the game? So this is why I stopped you earlier, Jack.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right. Sam, you seem to have so many good ideas for this question. Why don't you go first?
What? No, I don't. I love the bloody game.
Nah.
I'd say for me, there's one thing that happened to me is, I don't know, I got to a particular area. Because of the overactivity of the area, the game couldn't keep up. The frame rate dropped.
I'm not
so going to
say
bad.
Anything. Well, I know exactly where you're talking about.
Yeah, I think you know where I'm on about. But I was a bit disappointed by that because I was like, this is such a beautiful area. And it was just like ruined by the fact that it just started like dropping in frames. And I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
There are obviously, you know, there are some tech issues with the game, frame rate.
Yeah.
For the most part, I think it's easy to overlook just based on, like, the game just makes up for it in so many other areas. But
Of course, definitely.
I can see why in that particular moment it would have been disappointing.
Yeah, it was a bit disheartening. I was like, oh, really? Like, this particular area as well?
Yeah.
I was a bit saddened by that, but, I mean, I still like got to enjoy the area itself and stuff. Yeah.
I've heard that if you turn the Wi-Fi off, you can get improved frame rate.
Yeah, I heard something about this. Yeah.
It's a what is that?
Well, my phone doesn't seem to really connect to Wi-Fi anyway, so
yeah.
But that's a whole other topic, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my main switch problem.
Jack or Ollie, do you want to go next? About the question?
That I have is a problem and I can't play it forever because I have to work as well.
That's true.
Problem of the game. It's quite difficult off the cuff. I think if it gave you more stamina at the start, maybe it'd be better.
Maybe, yeah.
I think it sort of does teach you well that you can't just climb up to everything straight away. You've got to improve yourself before you can go to certain areas and find certain things. And it does teach you that sort of aspect well. But I think sometimes that does sort of limit you at the first. And I think when you are given that whole open area, go and explore it. It's just sort of, I'm constantly trying to find a cliff edge to just sort of sit on for a second just so the stamina bar goes back up and then climb again, which is a really not very legitimate way of actually doing the game. But you know, that's my real only massive flaw. Maybe some of the guardians could be a little bit easier to defeat.
No, come on, that's like when one of them comes up on you, that's like the tension. The first time I was absolutely terrified. I just thought, fucking hell, I'm done for, you know. But
do that well.
Like, I think that's what's appealing about them. It's like you spy on in the distance and suddenly you're thinking, great, all right, I got to get ready to, you know, go in on this thing. It's supposed to be tough, you know. Now Colin has asked us to say one thing, but I'm afraid I've got to be the devil's advocate and point out two things. I've got two problems, right? The first one is the voice acting. Now, I should clarify. I'm someone who unironically likes Shenmue, and I also unironically like Hotel Mario. Okay, so this might be a bit rich coming from me, but the voice acting, it just feels very it just feels kind of flat. I see what they've attempted, and I'm glad that they took that risk, because I think it was important that the series took that kind of leap forward to see how it turned out. But I just feel like it doesn't really, there are scenes that are supposed to be quite heavy, and it doesn't really move me in any way. A lot of it was quite forced. It's almost awkward to listen to at times. I haven't heard it all, so I can't speak for the entire game, but some particular bits, and I've seen other people have had, point out those particular bits. But then there are certain characters who I think sound really good, and it really suits them, and it suits their personality.
Yeah, there's some characters I'd say I agree sound absolutely awesome with the voice, and then there's some you just think, oh, please stop talking. Like, oh, God. Why? And it's just, it's kind of hit and miss, I think, with the voice.
It's been a good experiment for Zelda.
Yeah, I'm glad they took the risk. I think it could have been done better. Yeah, probably, but then I suppose some people might, that sounds like a very kind of wishy-washy thing to say. I personally just feel like it doesn't work where it's supposed to. It just doesn't sound very strong. My second big problem, I say problem, like it's kind of bringing the game down for me. It really kind of isn't. But I was actually slightly disappointed with what I've played of the dungeons of the Divine Beasts. I feel like the shrine puzzles are very, very smart. And they're kind of, the way they encourage you to think about, all right, what can I use out of the abilities that I've gained? And the way they introduce new kind of concepts you might not have thought about. I think that's really clever. But I suppose in comparison, the Divine Beasts felt they felt very easy. I actually thought I didn't find they really kind of challenged me.
Yeah, I was expecting a bigger sort of like area to explore, but I'm sadly disappointed.
Sorry, I don't want to cut in. Go on.
Oh, sorry, just like this one bit. It was with the first Divine Beast that I tackled. It was the elephant one from
same.
It was like three short puzzles, and that's it. It's like, you're giving me four dungeons, one of the defining features of a Zelda game, and it's only like three short puzzles and like a fairly like mediocre boss. Like, it was a cool boss. I still enjoyed the fight, but
I think definitely. I think the whole moving the trunk was interesting.
No, I like that. I probably shouldn't go into too much about specific, we've talked a fair few spoilers already by this point,
I did like the puzzles, and I really did appreciate the design of the puzzles, especially taking into account the architecture of what it is, and especially that's actually the size of it. So it's not like you go into it and it's somehow bigger than it seems on the outside. You're actually like going inside it, and like they have all of that in there already. I think that's pretty cool, but I don't know. Just something about like that first one felt a bit lacking to me. But
part of it for me was it almost felt a bit too like actually getting to these dungeons felt a little bit too brief. Kind of almost feel like you expect a bit more. Maybe this could just simply be the ones that I've played so far. I haven't had that kind of same build up or whatever, because I know one had more story focus than the other. But I just kind of I sort of felt that they went by very quickly. They didn't stick in my mind as much as some of the trials have. So.
That's fair enough. I think I may have to do two nitpicks as well. One, there has been like complaints about the weapon durability system, and even though I do think it's kind of silly that like just using one item that I never used only a couple of times and it then breaks, I don't really like that, but it does push forward this idea of constant exploration and always trying to find new things. Encourages exploration and diversity.
Or
in
how be a total goes. Cheat ass and just use an amiibo.
Yeah.
You could do that, yeah.
But my problem is, I wish there was like a separate inventory for weapons that shouldn't be weapons, if that makes sense. Like, a separate section for the Korok Leaf.
Yeah,
separate section
I agree.
For the...
Yeah.
And in that same section, you have one for torches, you have ones for mops and all sorts.
See, I feel like obviously in past Zelda games they'd be your kind of equipable, your kind of key items, you know, things like the Korok Leaf. But I almost in a way like how, all right, say a hammer for example, which is a tool intended for mining ore. I like how you actually are forced to think, okay, if I use this weapon, you know, I might knock someone's shield out of their hand, but I've got to think about the kind of the utility that it grants as well. You know, there's that there is that balance. I see why people were raising that argument, but at the same time, it's almost that, you know, there's that desperation where I haven't got any weapons. I'll have to use a mop or something. You know, that's kind of part of the charm for me in a way with that system.
And
Zelda, I'll save you with my master mop.
and the little other nitpick I had is, although I would say nitpick because of the Switch, I don't even encounter this all that often, it's the title screen. Because like
a bit underwhelming.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like in past Zelda games, you had like this big fanfare. Right, so it's like even on the original NES, you know, you had this theme, you had like this.
The story was scrolling down,
In Link to the Past, you had like the Triforce all coming together, and you got that little fanfare.
They're all quite iconic, those title screens.
Yeah, they're iconic. You know, like Wind Waker, you know, they all have their own music and whatnot.
It's
memorable.
See that? I remember it because it's that memorable.
Yeah. But
whereas on this, it's just
don't get me wrong.
Honestly, it feels very, something about it feels very kind of 2007 Nintendo kind of no eShop music. It's got that kind of vibe to it. It's very, it's almost a little bit clinical, but it's kind of saying to me, like, just get in the game, you know? Yeah. Like, it almost wants to make as minimal a barrier as possible between you getting into that world. And
yeah,
they had to save memory somewhere, didn't they?
So I guess so. but I mean, still, it's kind of like Buster, I feel.
I'm sure, I don't know how big an impact that would have had. I'm sure they could have removed a couple of blades of grass or something, you know. And
yeah.
No one would notice.
But yeah.
No, memory's not running properly. Remove the grass!
Right, that's it for my end on Breath of the Wild. So, Ollie, are there any other games you have been playing?
Not really, I've got to be honest. I played a bit of the Puyo Puyo Tetris demo on the Switch. I haven't really got too much to say about it. It's Tetris and Puyo Puyo, which if you like those games, then yeah, you'll probably enjoy this. I'm a Dr. Mario man, so that kind of cut me short.
Yeah.
If you like those games, I'll be doing a video on Mean Bean Machine, which was on same Mega Drive many years ago. It's pretty much the same game.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, interesting. The connection there. I don't think Dr. Robotnik is in this one, though, which is very upsetting. The only other thing I've played is the title screen of the Splatoon 2 test fire. I tweeted about this the other day because it released on the Japanese eShop. And the first thing I thought when I heard that released was, is that music from the trailer in there? And it was. And I was over the moon because that song is, I don't know what the kids say, it's fire. You know, it's lit. The energy was so good.
I still prefer the original theme, though, to be honest.
The original theme's good. It's quite memorable. But, you know, I like the weird lore surrounding the music. Like, they've got these fictional bands and stuff.
I do like that aspect, yeah.
But yeah, that was it basically, and I scarily have already racked up something like 20 minutes just on that title screen listening to the music.
Just a shout out to our Nintendo Dev friends. Zach actually went onto the Splatoon's loading screen to do a screenshot to then put on his Facebook page. It's like, that's so much hard work, just to see that.
Yeah.
Just for a demo. Download a demo because you can't play yet.
He's obviously excited. I'm excited. Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying it out, you know, because that first Splatoon test fire for the first game completely sold me on it. I was almost hooked instantly.
A question that's plagued my mind is, do you think Callie and Mari will have a makeover, like a new look almost?
They've not shown much.
Hey, did you see the trailer? One of them's obviously dead, right? That's what's happening.
I saw this one picture where it was like, why are people complaining?
Callie died. It's because Mari won.
I think Reggie was asked actually.
Was it Reggie?
I think it was Reggie.
I thought it was one of the game's directors or something. I should remember the guy's
someone
name.
Someone was asked about it. So where's the other one? Basically, oh, they're around.
I'm sure she'll come back because they've got to sell merchandise, haven't they? You know, it's easy to forget, but like this game is like a cultural phenomenon in Japan. Like, for a new IP, you know, to have a concert, that's pretty mad. I'm really glad. I'm glad again. It's a slightly quirky new Nintendo IP. I'm pleased. I think one of the best things I ever heard was that it was going to be a Mario game, but it wasn't. I'm so glad they didn't go through with that.
It effectively is Mario's aspect.
They forgot about that. They forgot that game existed when they were developing it.
They said that, but they knew about it.
They started off. They say that they started off as a rabbit or
rabbit.
Tofu. I was going to say tofu, but I was thinking of tofu from Resident Evil, which is a really weird thing to think of all of a sudden.
There was tofu originally in the first design.
Tofu was like the prototype. And then they went to rabbits, but people were like, why is it rabbits? And then they thought, squids make sense. So that's how we...
It almost feels like it's such a fluke of an idea. Like, it's so out there, you know? But I think they were onto a win.
It's just imagining someone going to Miyamoto's office and saying, look, we've got this game with rabbits firing these guns, but why rabbits?
The table would be in the air without a doubt.
Flip.
he probably would make it a Mario game and only put toads in it, nothing else, because that's everybody they like to typecast Miyamoto as the evil villain now, you know.
Captain Toad and its special guest character. Yeah.
Right. What are the other games we've been playing? Because we've been talking for ages.
It's what we do. It's the podcast.
Yeah.
I know, but I mean,
has anyone experienced the Snipperclips demo? What do you think of Snipperclips?
The what?
The Snipperclips demo.
I've played the demo with a friend. I loved it. I thought it's really charming. Just like all the puzzles, and then like the two little Snipperclip people. That made me laugh. That was funny.
It's definitely more than I expected to be. Like having to cut out your own partner's like bits out. That sounds really weird.
How do I word it? Cut out their bits.
It's definitely so different. I like different. That's good. Yay. It's a puzzle. I don't know what else to say. It's fun. Go play it if you haven't played it yet. Give it a go. I played 1-2 Switch.
I quite enjoyed that. Me and my family played it, and for people who don't play a lot of games, it really brought out a sense of fun for everyone, which is nice.
Is it worth the price tag though?
I'd still say I agree with quite a few people on the internet and say it should have been bundled with the console, but at the same time they have explained why it wasn't bundled with the console, but
give you more memory than the 25 GB you've got.
They're kind of doing themselves in a bit there. They're kind of coming up with an excuse that highlights a problem, you know, but
yeah, and they didn't fix the problem. That's the problem. But yeah, it's great. I love it. I've had so much fun playing random games with other people who've never played on the Switch yet, and trying to explain it to people as they play, and they just look at each other bemused, and then they start playing it, and then they really love it. It's been a really great experience. I think it really does show the technology off well, and it's just fun. I think that's the main thing with it. Everyone I spoke to who played it afterwards and said they really enjoyed it. But it's just a load of mini games, and it's just fun. That's the best way it should be, and also the way we should look at games continually, I think. But I've got to mention the I went to a pub quiz on Monday night. And it was for the Hampshire Gaming Hubs group that did a Nintendo quiz, and we had a decider between four other teams. We used my console, and we played 1-2 Switch. We used the bottle.
The shake the bottle one.
Shake the bottle one. The one you really can. You shake out as much as you want. You pass it around the room. We use that as the decider, and it's just so entertaining to watch people shake it so lightly, then pass it on because they think it's going to pop. It's a really, really good party game, and I highly recommend if you are having a drunken party, you should get the hell. So, but yeah, what more can I say? How else, like any of the games specifically on 1-2 Switch?
I played a couple of them at the preview event, so I can't comment on like the package as a whole. But I think the thing that really stood out to me is that, like, it's a very, very social game. It's not for everybody. It's aimed at a very specific audience, and let's be honest, that audience probably isn't the kind of the people who are really excited for Bomberman's Revival. You know, like it's a casual game aimed at a casual market. But I think you have to respect it kind of contextually for what it is.
That is Nintendo's main market, and I think it sells well to them. I think that's...
Yeah, I mean, it's got this, you know, it's got this big interaction on, well, it's got a big focus on player interaction and kind of the actual physical space around you, which more in a different way to the Wii. Because obviously the Wii was, you know, you're moving your arms, but this is more you're looking at your opponent moving around the room. And
I don't know if you saw, there was an article last week about 1-2 Switch, and there was a young couple. I think one of them is actually blind.
I heard about that. That was a great story.
He's saying that he doesn't play games because he can't see them. But of the 28 mini games, I think it is, 29 mini games on 1-2 Switch, he can play 20 of them with no problems. Yeah. So I'm like, that is fantastic.
I think that a lot of that comes down to the nature of the game, as opposed to, you know, the actual. I think you could tear it to pieces for its production value or for its concept, but contextually, with the right people in the right environment, you know, the right setting, it could easily, you know, you could say it's a 10 out of 10. There's no reason why, you know, that's very subjective, but like I think, you know. But then I'm the guy who has recently learned to ardently defend the vision of Wii Music. So there we go. I shouldn't be discrediting myself.
Oh, my God. Those little people were so creepy in that.
Oh, man. Bring back Wii Music.
No. Switch Music. I'd be down for that, honestly.
Switch Music. Wow. Wii Music for Smash. What? No. That doesn't make sense. What? Anyway... any other games anyone?
I've been playing Shovel Knight. Like we said earlier, I double dipped. I got it again.
Is there anything different between the two versions?
They've just recently brought out Body Swap for the Shovel of Hope story. So you can swap all the genders of the main lot of characters.
Really?
They must have gone to a great length of effort to redo it all. Like, all the sprites, their animations. They've changed all the text so that it reads right when you change the gender.
Things like Shield Knight is now male.
Shield Knight's a guy. The Enchantress is the Enchanter.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, you
that's
should
really
see some...
Random, but...
some are really amazingly good. It's like, wow. Like... there's even kind of like, what is it? Treasure Knight looks like one of the sisters from Bioshock. It's really weird.
Oh.
Because of the whole helmet and whatnot. But like, it's brilliant. It's so much fun to replay again. Just even to see those funny little bits.
Honestly, though, from the company who created a butt mode in the game, like I'm both not surprised but also very pleased. So like it's just these little things. It's just fun, you know. That's it. It's this kind of it throws back to the cheat codes of old, but with a modern twist. So.
I just thoroughly love Shovel Knight. I can't wait to get to the Spectre of Torment because I just like I want to go back through the other stories before I. Before I go on to Spectre Knight.
While we're on Shovel Knight, kind of related, can I just say shout out to Capcom for not bringing the Disney Afternoon collection to the Switch? Face palming. Yeah, Shovel Knight's amazing. Everyone go pick it up right now. Go do it.
Oh, yeah. God, I champion that, definitely.
It's awesome. Especially if you haven't played it before. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah, this is a good system to play it on, I think.
Yeah, and especially you can take it wherever you want.
What I love is also that in just even from the sprites, they also showed off the artwork, like the properly drawn characters. I was just like, oh, so that's like that's that detail. And
yeah,
I was like, oh, that's so cool. It was amazing. And like they've actually released recently the entirety of the cast. In the opposite gender, and I was just like, that's amazing. It's so cool. Like I didn't really notice, but like Shovel Knight has like as a girl, like the little guards are like more skirt like, so I was like, oh, that's cool. It's amazing.
Wow.
That little detail that makes a big difference. But yeah, I can't wait to get to Spectre Knight because like that'd be awesome.
So Sam, Bomberman.
It's all right.
You're really showing it to us.
Yeah.
It's a good game. Like, the multiplayer, brilliant. You know, I don't get me wrong. I love the multiplayer bit. The story part is just so cheesy.
How's the gameplay, though? Like, does it hold up? Is it Bomberman? Is it actually?
I think when it first launched, there have been a few latency issues with controls, and I must admit,
yes,
I agree.
They mentioned that, haven't they? It's going to be patched or something.
As of this recording, I think they have released a patch to fix those problems both offline and online. So hopefully, gameplay should be more enjoyable. I hope.
Is it worth £50?
I wouldn't say 50 quid. I'd say 30.
Yeah, I was going to say
30. At a push. Yeah. But I was kind of like, Naz, Bomberman, I want it anyway. But yeah, I'd say for those who just don't want to pay 50 quid for it, just wait a little while. Yeah, I mean, I like the fact you can unlock stuff, like more maps and special areas and costume stuff.
Bit of replayability, but, I suppose, in that.
Yeah, but I just don't see many people paying 50 quid for it.
I'm going to be that guy and just say, look, slap Saturn Bomberman on there. I'll pay 50 quid for that.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not a game I openly shout about, but it's still a good game. And the graphics really help bring it up a bit, making it a little bit more worthwhile.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people kind of criticize them because they look quite kind of simple. They're almost a little bit lifeless, maybe. But
yeah,
that's coming from sprite-based Bomberman, you know, which has got quite a lot of character in it.
It's not as bad. It depends how you look. I think from like where we are currently, I think it's like nice and up to date. I could probably agree it maybe is a little simple, but it's nice and crisp and clear, definitely.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. So, yeah, I think... Does that wrap it up for what have we been playing?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, we've all done Zelda then.
Okay.
Yeah, probably more Zelda to come as well. So.
Yeah.
All right. And with that, let's move on to our final section. And here we are in the final section of what could be a pretty long episode of the podcast, but still good. I don't know why I said still because. Most episodes of the show are good. Don't know why I said
most. All of our episodes are good, dude. Like,
don't even put doubt
in
their
mind. Don't even say most.
Yeah, God, God.
I don't know.
Confidence in your own creation.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. All right. Oliver, do you want to go
God,
first?
Listeners, the things we have to do to keep him positive. Oh.
Yeah, sure. I'll go ahead. So I picked a website that I'm a real big fan of. I decided to pick something a little bit kind of quirky, a little bit niche, because I figure that sort of lines up with what I do. The website is called, well, the web address is miki800.com. It's a Japanese blog, and they cover all kinds of kind of games culture things, a lot of kind of merchandise, kind of tie-in items, books, fashion, events, a lot of music, chiptune stuff in Japan. And I recommend checking it out. If you want a kind of up-to-date news on very kind of quirky sort of like retro game related items from a Japanese perspective, so a lot of stuff that's not getting released in the West, you know, and I really mean anything, like it's kind of crazy stuff, you know, it'll be one week, it'll be kind of chocolates shaped like slimes from Dragon Quest, you know, the next week it'll be a pair of jeans modeled after Xevious. It's got a really kind of good range of stuff on there. Obviously, it's written in Japanese, so there'll be a bit of difficulty there if you can't read Japanese. But there's lots of nice pictures on there, so that should make up for it. So that's miki800.com, or you can follow them on Twitter at sosamemo, which is S-O-U-S-A memo. So I recommend checking that out. It's a bit different.
Blah, blah, blah. Yay.
Nice.
Who's next? Who's next?
I don't know.
Anyone? Who is?
All right, I'll go next. I don't know much, but Ntandan is a pretty cool dude. I want to watch and read more of his stuff, but at the end of the day, he's pretty respectable in the video games industry, so I just wanted to congratulate him on his 11th anniversary in the industry, and hopefully I could be as great as him someday. That's all I have. Oh, actually, no. If I may,
no.
Another one. It's to this yeah. site called.
That's just stop. No more.
It's QWERTY.com. They're a really good t-shirt site, but a good couple weeks ago, probably even a month ago, they were like, listen, you haven't been on our site for a good time. You could get one shirt off and another shirt free. So it's like, I'm going to get that deal. So I got one t-shirt based off of One Punch Man, which is pretty sick.
This is an anime podcast now.
Yeah. I think that's really cool. And then I got this other one based on the IT Crowd, which is a pretty good show, but it was modelled after an NES cover. So you got the sprite based, you got the sprites of the main cast on there. You've got the, instead of Nintendo, it said Wenham Industries, which is where they work. You've got like the cool number at one corner, which is a reference to one of the numbers used in the show. So yeah, a lot of cool references to the show there on that shirt. So that's pretty cool. But also it's just modelled after an NES cover. So, you know,
forget the anime, forget the games. This is now a British TV podcast, yeah. So I'm going to go first. My chat Teeks Roadshow.
No, I'm sorry. It's all about the chase, really. That's what it has for British
chase,
television.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess with the chasers.
Shout.
Mark from the Chase. He would floor probably any of us.
He's now in charge of wrestling brand as well.
He
definitely. So there you go.
Anyway,
no reference.
What a brilliant sidetrack there.
Anyway, who's next? Me? Should I go?
Yeah.
Go on. Do my thing. I got a couple shout-outs actually. I briefly mentioned Hatch Game Hub. I'm doing a podcast quiz. Thanks very much, guys, for letting me come along and show off. Twitch, you know, everyone else has got one. So they do a quiz every Monday now in September. So if you are around that sort of area, but it's at least one Monday every month. So I'll share it on our pages so you can, if anyone is interested. And there's a few local to us, so maybe we have a few more people turn up. That'd be cool. But my big shout out this episode is for the Dreamcast Junkyard. A good friend of the pod, Tom, the state Lucy, he is the main man there, and he's been sharing all week that they've got one article about the Dreamcast Junkyard that's just been shared all over the internet this week. And it's about people still using dial-up rather than broadband just to play online games on the Dreamcast, which is, it's just insane, really. But there's this amazing group of people there on their Facebook and Twitter page as well that all so enthusiastic about this console from a few generations ago now. And I just can't knock their enthusiasm and actual knowledge of what they know about the Dreamcast. It's just a great group, and I think you should go and go on Twitter at the Dreamcast Junkyard on Facebook as well. Such a really decent group of people. I've been completely abusing them with Switch Talk all last couple of weeks. So I apologise to that, guys. But hopefully, which I think is a big 7 point if it does happen. Virtual console, Dreamcast games. Hurry up, Switch.
Oh yeah, I'll be down for that.
Come on.
Definitely.
Let's get him on there. Let's just do it. Crazy Taxi.
Oh god, imagine playing Jet Set Radio on the toilet.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh my god.
Amazing. Come on, just do it. Pray for it. Virtual console. Come on. Yeah. Right, anyway, that's my shout-outs, other than one with Sam.
Yes, we'll get to that in a second. So I'll do my usual one, which is awesome, Street Pass UK. Actually, saying that, I believe Street Pass UK have just done their final podcast. So, it's Street Pass UK's last podcast, but I don't think Street Pass is just, it might change to something different, possibly. Because obviously, where Street Pass was with the 3DS, now moving into it might be something else now. So we'll probably have to keep our eyes peeled. Keep it like, for anybody who doesn't know, Street Pass UK is basically community-run events. There is a website you can check out what your local group with, like. From what I've seen, it's mostly new Switch events, getting to play new games, getting to meet some people, and having some really, really good fun. Check out, we want to have some gaming fun. And
UK, or
yep, that's the one. And our second shout out goes to the Southampton Superpods. God, too many S's in that. Yeah, basically, myself and Jack will be appearing on that to represent the podcast.
We shall. We shall.
Yes, we shall. We have no idea what we're doing, what we're going to be talking about.
We'll be talking a lot about the Switch, like we've just been doing for the last however long. I think the whole idea is to sort of demo it off to people who are going to be there.
Yeah, that's true.
Hopefully talk about it, I guess, and gaming in general. And I've got a few other things I've got in mind. I'll have to see how it goes. I don't want to reveal all our secrets to our live audience.
Secrets?
The secrets are so secret, I don't even know what they are. So.
God.
We're definitely doing it. We're supporting charity. Please come and watch and donate some money to...
Yes, that's the important thing. It's 11... Our slot's at 11 o'clock, isn't it?
Yes, 11 o'clock on Saturday next week, which is the 25th.
Yes.
25th?
Yes.
So, yeah, come check it out. I'll put all the links to all the web page and stuff all over our Twitter and Facebook, and maybe I'll even do a little recording for it so we know where it is on iTunes and on Podomatic as well, so you'll be able to do all the links and share it around. any support in sharing it would be greatly appreciated, and hopefully it will turn out all right. So, and you, if you are local around the area and are interested in creating your own podcast, get in touch with them, because they're after getting people who've never done podcasts before to do their own one for the show. Ooh. Which is an interesting idea. I really like the idea of it.
That's a pretty neat idea, actually, yeah.
So, I think what I'd say is a little bit of advice is don't be afraid. Just do it. It could be funny. Just off the cuff kind of stuff just creates great humour and draws people in. And you never know, something could evolve from it.
Great humour on this podcast.
Yes, like the many banters that we have on here.
Yes, okay. But yeah, thanks very much for the super pod, guys. It's been very nice already, and sort of we're ongoing talks between them. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we can get it all set up and working well. So I'm really looking forward to it, actually. Now, I don't know what it sounds like. Are you nervous or anything, or looking forward to it?
Yeah, I'm oh, a bit funny about a live audience, but at the same time, I'm just like, sod it. Just
I don't feel a bit money there, because it's like 11 o'clock at night. So.
I know, but still.
Cool. But if we think of anything, if you've got any ideas what we could talk about, please send them through.
Send us questions. Send us
to our socials. Matthew, let's end the pod. We're at the end.
Yes, concentrate, dear boy.
Sorry, it's just I have school tomorrow, so.
Hey, I haven't eaten yet. Hurry up.
Oh god, yeah, sorry, no.
I've got chicken waiting for me downstairs.
Oh
right?
God, alright, yeah, I need to do this.
I'm on.
No. Alright, so let's
He's
just
got
leave.
A bucket yet.
Yeah, so
yeah,
let's just leave
yeah,
with
I won't even go in there.
Okay, so the podcast, Nintendo Podcast System, you can find us on Twitter at NPodcastSystem. That's the same for our Facebook. I handle our Twitter and Jack handles our Facebook. You can find the podcast on YouTube, that's normally where we have episodes up first, and then at a later time, we have them up on iTunes and Podomatic. So, a decent range of where to experience it. I think that's it on where you can find the pod. Ollie, as our guest, where can people check out you?
Alright, the best place to go is minusworld.co.uk. So that's where all my writing is. I've got some interesting projects in the works, which I think, you know, I hope that people will be who listen to you will be interested in. You can also find me on Twitter at minusworld. Facebook, Twitch, YouTube is all minusworld. Instagram, Oliver Jameson, if you're into that kind of thing. Yeah, that's about it.
Cool.
Sam, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at samspade_UK. You can also find me at samspadegaming on Twitter, as well as Facebook, and which is of course my YouTube channel as well.
Right, and Jack, where can people find you?
People can find me at gorny7789 on Twitter. I'm also the same on Facebook, and also YouTube, which is nice and full of Sonic videos at the moment. You should go watch them. They're really cool.
Alright, and finally, you can find me writing for 3dtribune.com and nintendoprime.com, although I probably won't be able to do anything for them for a good while. You can find me on Twitter at ASkibber. That's where I'm prominently active, where I'm most active, and I'm going to try and do more YouTube stuff. By the time this episode comes out, there should be me doing a very unprofessional unboxing of the Danganronpa 1-2 Reload Limited Edition. It lasts for around about just under half an hour, which it really shouldn't be. But
how long did it take you to get it open?
A very long time, clearly. No, I was just I was just like unboxing all of the contents, just giving my thoughts on the series as a whole. So yeah, if you just like me being an utter idiot and making a fool out of myself, then definitely check out that 25-minute video. Which should be up by now. I had a lot of fun making it, so let me know if you want to see more videos of that nature in the future, as well as just more YouTube content, because I would like to do more of that. Anyway, that's what I've set up for our individual places. Oliver, what is our music closing us out today?
The music I've picked to close us out is a song from Doshin the Giant. It's called Yellow Giant. It was composed by a man named Tatsuhiko Asano, who's actually a kind of like fairly well-known guitarist in Japan. And it's quite a somber, very experimental song. It plays at the end of each day in Doshin the Giant, where essentially the giant dies, which is pretty grim. And he's then reincarnated the next day. And I thought that'd be a nice one to go out on, because it's all about endings, you know, which sounds
we're gonna die and be reincarnated.
Reincarnated
the next day.
Yeah. When the sun comes up the next day and then never appear in another game. That's the thanks very much for having me.
I was just about to say, it's been a pleasure having you on. You've been a great guest.
Yeah. Thanks, Ollie.
Yeah,
it's been really good.
I'm glad that we finally managed to do something.
Definitely.
Because this is a similar thing with Dan's distillery. Last episode, because
you can never say distillery.
Distillery. Oh God.
Because
we've been following each other for a good while, so I'm really glad. So I'm trying to get more of those people as fans. If there's anyone in particular that you want to see on the show, feel free to get in contact with any of us, and we'll try our best to get that person on for you.
Unless it's Donald.
Unless it's Donald Trump or any other major celebrity.
Yes. Oh, yeah, he can just...
Anyone who'd want any money.
Yeah. Right. So that wraps up for episode 40. We're around about a week away from a 2-year anniversary, actually.
Oh, my God.
Which is weird.
Oh, yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Let me check quickly. I'm delaying this the end of the episode by... good margin.
But while you're doing that, releases. Neo Geo King of Fighters 94 and out today. Has Been Heroes is out the 28th. Fake Pass 29th. And then Lego City Undercover and then Mario Kart Deluxe. So, yeah, there's a few games coming to the Switch. Don't worry. But there are games. Don't worry. Matthew?
Games.
Right, so the first episode of Nintendo Podcast System Financial Crisis that was uploaded onto YouTube on March the 22nd. God, so if I ever need a good cringe session, I could always check out that.
Listen to that.
Yeah.
The episode that disappeared and then had to be redone completely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Or
the classic episode 5, Nothing Has Happened, the good old days of where it was an hour long podcast.
Hey, you have to start somewhere. My first ever article was about a Game & Watch themed set of bookends, so there you go.
You've got to start somewhere.
Yeah, small beginnings.
Cool, all right. Let's go.
So that's it for episode 40 of the Nintendo Podcast System with our special guest, Ollie. Thank you once again for coming on the
show. Thanks very much.
I hope you all enjoyed this episode of the Nintendo Podcast System, and happy gaming.
Happy gaming!
Freaking dragons!